Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Paper Tray Radio. This is episode number 15, and today is October 8th, 2011. My name is Erin Lincoln, and I am your podcast hostess, like I have been for the last 14 episodes, right? It's hard to believe we've gotten this far. Today we have a great episode for you. We're talking to Dana, who is Granola Girl 2 on the forums, and she has her own custom invitation business where she hand stamps invitations for profit, for herself, and we're going to talk to her about the realities of that, some tips and tricks, and what you need to know if you decide to do something like this yourself and get yourself a nice little stamping budget, right? We have some great discussion questions. A lot of you have called in. I want to thank you so much, everyone who is supporting this by calling in, asking questions, participating. It really is a big help for me, and I appreciate it. And some of you I've noticed call in a lot, and thank you. I love you guys. I love hearing your voices, and like I said before, without you, there is no program. So keep it up, everybody. All right, we're going to go straight into our discussion question. From last month, it was, what do you do to rejuvenate your creativity? So we're going to take it right to the phones and see what some of you had to say about that.
Hi, Erin. It's Holly Field, NC Field. I just wanted to give you a call and answer your question in regards to creativity. I have to agree with you. I spent this summer in a move and just busy with a lot of other things, and now ever since we've kind of gotten settled, I've had a great creative spurt, especially since I have to make 256 Christmas cards for my husband's company. So I agree with you. I think sometimes it's just finding that balance of taking that time away and then coming back and feeling rejuvenated.
Hi, this is Terry from Coal City. I am calling about your question from the last podcast about what do I do to rejuvenate my creativity. Breaks, I agree. I think taking breaks is a good thing. And then if I need to, I try and do a class of some sort. There have been some really neat online courses. The latest one I did was with Jennifer McGuire. Different techniques, and that was so much fun to look at my stamp sets in a different way and how could I use them with this fun new technique. So that's what works for me. So hope you are having a great day. Thanks so much.
Hi, Erin. This is Joyce Casaldi calling, and I just wanted to call and give you my answer to this week's question. And my answer is simply, well, I guess it's twofold. First, I go to the internet for inspiration, like Pinterest and the Paper Tray Inc. blog or Nicole's blog, and or even just my blog roll. I'm always finding inspiration there, and it's so easy to find. But if I really need a break from scrapping, I tend to find myself looking for projects where I can get messy. Like this past weekend, I refinished a bookcase. Of course, it was for my scrap room, but I was able to still be a little crafty and paint and use some really pretty decorative wood on it. So that also helps, I think, give you a little break, but still you get to indulge in your craftiness. Unlike house cleaning where, you know, you really can't get messy doing that, but it would be really nice if it was as fun as stamping with Paper Tray Ink stamps. Thanks so much, and have a great Paper Tray Ink radio episode. Bye.
Hi, this is Sue in Grapevine, and I'm calling about the Paper Tray Radio, How Do I Rejuvenate My Creativity? I think my creativity is sometimes inhibited by too many choices. So I find that if I just take a paper pad or a paper package that has paper and some embellishments and maybe a couple sketches and just challenge myself to make some things only with this limited amount of supplies, that sometimes sparks my creativity, and it doesn't send me running off into my room to find this thing or that thing. And also if I pick a theme, like say I'm going to make a bunch of boy birthday cards to send to Operation Right Home, I just take this one limited amount of supplies. I've got maybe a couple sketches. I've got a limited focus of boy birthday cards, and then that helps me to get some things done. And it sparks my creativity because it challenges me to think of how can I use, you know, these six things to come up with something really fun that fits my needs. So that's a way that I help my creativity when I have too many choices swirling around in my mind. Thanks. Bye.
My name is Veronica Zalas, and I'm calling you to answer your question about are you continually creative? Do you take breaks? For me, I take breaks. I find that if I try to do too much in too short of a time, I just get frustrated and create a block. So I may maybe 2 or 3 days of doing lots of cards and then taking a break for 3 or 4 days. And that's what works for me. What rejuvenates me is just buying a new paper pad or finding a pretty embellishment that I want to build my card around. And I have found that that works best for me. All right. Thanks, and I hope you have a great day.
Thanks, ladies. Sounds like creative breaks can be just a ticket to clear out that creative haze. And I agree that sometimes too many options can be a bad thing. So pull out a handful of supplies onto your work table and force yourself to get creative with them and only them. Necessity is the mother of invention here. And, you know, magic always happens when you don't really have an exit strategy. You've got to work with what you've got. This really isn't unlike what the design team goes through every month when we get the new supplies. We are allowed to use past releases, but the focus needs to be on the new. And so that's what we have on our desk. And the creative high that comes when you are limited like that and you're forced to be creative, nothing else beats it. If you're looking for a creative high, and I talk about that a lot because I do, it's almost, it makes me happy. And I'm sure it makes you happy. I'm sure we're all in the same boat here. We're feathered friends, right? So, give it a shot, and you'll be surprised with the result. Like I said, magic always happens. This month, I want to talk about shopping and stash strategies because this has moved from a sad hobby for me to a lifelong activity that I'm going to always participate in. I'm thinking more long-term here. So it's more of a collection standpoint versus a trend standpoint. I've gone from having more of a rotating inventory of stamps where things come in and go out equally. You know, there's buy-sell trade forums, yard sales, giving to friends. And now I see myself building a collection. And I'm going to always have this collection. And in my back of my mind, I'm always thinking about what I like personally and what I'm going to use personally. So tell me how you shop. How do you decide to purchase your stamp sets? And for you old-timers out there who have been doing this for a while, and including myself, how have your shopping habits changed? Can't wait to hear your answers. I've always believed that a percentage of the enjoyment of this hobby is in the shopping. Oh, yes, totally. So feel free to spill the beans. You're in good company. Okay, we're on the phone with Dana Seymour. Now, some of you might know her as Granola Girl 2 on the PTI forums. And what's so interesting about her is she has her own invitation for hire business using paper crafting and stamping, where she produces cards and invitations for people who ask her, and she makes a little profit for herself and maybe your stamp budget too. So, hey, Dana, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. Thanks, Erin.
Oh, well, I am dying to hear about how this all works. Can you tell me how you got started in making invitations for people and getting paid for it? Because everyone wants to know how to add their stamp budget a little bit.
Well, it's sort of funny. I began making invitations in college when I started a catering business for professors as a side job. Mm-hmm. And they would want the whole package. They wanted, you know, the invites and the food and decor and things. So instead of just bringing the food, I would start, you know, in advance and make some invitations for them. And it just, they liked them a lot. So I kept it up.
Now, do you still cater?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Well, only for family events.
Only for, so something that you started in college is now if you do this just part-time for fun, or is this a source of income for you?
It's definitely a source of income, especially in the off months. Well, in the off months for me, but mm-hmm. for my real job. But yeah, it's definitely a source of income.
And how often do you? How many times a month do you actually have orders placed?
It's more times of the year. It's more seasonal
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of it is weddings.
Okay.
The bulk of my business is weddings. And then the other part that I do a lot of are like corporate, holiday, and thank you cards. A lot of small businesses in the area like to say, hey, can you give me 100 or so thank you cards or holiday cards that I can send out to our customers. And so it gets really busy for me around the holidays. And thankfully, I don't send out my own holiday cards, so I'm good.
Do you do what I do when we order from Shutterfly around here? So do you advertise for your business at all?
I do. I have several flyers that are generally in small boutique type stores mm-hmm. in the area. And usually it really is word of mouth. It's amazing how word can spread, and people will call me and they'll say, oh, I was at this wedding and, you know, I received this invitation and, you know, oh, and I live in North Carolina, but can you please, you know, do some for my daughter? And I'll be like, what? You live in North Carolina?
Oh, wow. Wow. So what was your biggest order and how long did it take you to get it taken care of?
My biggest order was actually just a few months ago, and it was 300 wedding invitations for a fifth grade teacher at my son's private school.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know how to say it.
Oh, you can say it. She's not listening.
Oh, this was one of my easier customers. No. Usually the bride wants to help. And I learned early on that that's a really big no-no.
Oh, really? Can you maybe tell us a little anecdote of when it went down?
Well, the first time I allowed, you know, the first time I was ever mm-hmm. asked, and I said, sure, you know, why not? And I pre-cut and pre-formed everything, and it was just a matter of her coming over to my studio and helping to assemble, and it was crazy. She didn't know how to use glue right, and there would be clumps and it would be crooked, and I couldn't stand it. My OCD would kick in, and I would just mm-hmm. be like, let's put this aside. Wait, let me do that one. And it was horrendous.
It's probably a good idea.
I have never done that again, and I would never do it again.
So how long did it take you to do 350 invitations?
Unfortunately, I waited too long. I'm a big procrastinator, and I waited until the last second, and then I just kept working and working until they were done, and I actually had to take a few days off from my regular job just to get them done. And I enlisted
the
help of my 12-year-old and my husband, and then my big shot broke. The motor died on it.
Do you have an electric one like I do, which I love?
Yes. Yes, I love it. It was my favorite thing in the world.
I can't imagine doing 350 of anything without, the hand crank on, like, the cuddle bug. Oh, no.
No way.
That little zoom of the button.
I loved my big shot. And I was cutting, I had to cut 1,200 leaf prints dies, and I only had, of course, one of each. My big shot motor died, and I was frantic. I was in the middle of nowhere, so I had to go into Buffalo the next day and buy a Vagabond, because apparently they don't make the Big Shot Express anymore.
No.
And they've stopped making it. Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Mine better not. Really?
Yeah. Apparently there is some flaw in the motor, and they know it, so they stopped making it, and now they only make the Vagabond. So I was really upset because I now have a Vagabond, but I really liked my Big Shot better.
So I've got to ask, do you do custom designs for everybody? Do you, like, make a original invitation for everyone, like a proof, and they have to approve it? Or do you have, like, a set of things people can pick from?
I have a set number of layouts, I would say, mm-hmm. for especially for wedding invitations.
Right.
But when someone says, oh, you know, I'm interested in what could you make for me, I usually redo that layout, but I do it in their particular colors or with
right.
their initials or whatever they want. But I definitely have a set.
Now, do you mostly, you probably print, like, all the information, right, on cardstock,
yes.
and then you add paper crafting element. Are they mostly stamping, like paper tray ink stamps? Right. Or
No, they really are.
they really are
paper tray ink stamps.
I made my brother and sister in law's wedding invitations, and
I remember. In fact, I begged you on your blog to show them.
Oh, was that you?
Because I just the color scheme, you showed one part of it, and it was just lovely, and I thought, oh, I want to see what she did.
I wish I could take credit for the color scheme, but that was all Sarah. That was all my sister-in-law. But you're right. When you have to do anything repetitively, just cost-effectively, you need to use something like stamps or tools or dies that you can just do unlimited with, and it's not going to cost you anything more. Right. That's a good tip. So you mostly use stamp them once they're printed.
I do. And usually ink has been my big trouble, so I usually make sure I buy an extra re-inker for the ink that I'm going to be using if I'm stamping a lot, because mm-hmm. I don't want to run out in the middle and then have to, you know, wait and ship a new one. And so I usually always buy a re-inker in the main color that I'm using.
There you go. So what is the craziest request you've ever gotten?
Oh, my goodness, Erin. Oh, I don't know if I can say this online. It was for a divorce party invitation.
A divorce party?
It was. I was shocked, actually. But it was a lot of fun. If I try not to think about what it was for, it was a lot of fun to make them.
So what kind of elements did you use for a divorce party?
I did not use paper tray stamps.
I can't think of any. That would work.
The ex-wife was throwing this party, and she wanted invitations for all of her friends and family. And her ex-husband's name was Jack. And so I sort of got creative, and I found a donkey stamp. And we
oh,
did
gosh.
A, you know, I'm free from the Jack bleach.
Yeah, yeah. Or hit the road, Jack. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I had to make a card once. My father-in-law, he asked me to make a card for a family member, a distant family member, who, how do I say this? Got in the family way before they were married, and then quickly
okay.
got married, and then had the baby. So it was, and they were older, you know, it wasn't like they were teenagers, they were in their 30s, whatever. So I had to make this card, and I think I said, first comes love, then comes baby, then comes a wedding carriage or something. I mixed it up, and inside it says, happy to know you've been blessed with all three.
Oh, that's so clever.
You know, and they laughed. You know, you have to have the right type of person for that. But apparently
okay.
they got a kick out of it because, you know, some people, like, sidestep around that kind of stuff, and it's best just to, you know,
yep.
hey,
lay it all
we
out in the open.
You. Here we go.
Yeah, that's clever. What a good idea.
Yeah, every, you know, that's why I like about stamping and card making is you can customize cards for whatever occasion. Even, you know, I call them non-Hallmark cards because you're not going to get, like, divorce party invitations at Hallmark or...
No. No, you're not.
Yeah, shotgun wedding invitations. Congratulations at Hallmark. So, you know, you can have a lot of fun with it. But we're getting off topic. So what kind of advice do you have for anybody who might be interested in a custom invitation business like you've got going on?
Well, it's a lot of work.
I bet.
Sometimes I really have to learn to turn down jobs if I
mm-hmm.
know I'm just not going to have the time. And that's really hard for me because I do rely on word of mouth a lot. So I don't want too many bad reports out there, but I really have had to turn down several jobs in the past because it just didn't fit in my schedule or, you know, two or three weddings at the same time is just too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be my best advice is learn when to say no.
So, Dana, what kind of tips can you give to people if they're thinking of making their own invitation business?
Well, it's really important to the customers that they be mailable. So I try to avoid things like buttons, and I stick to minimal layers just to help it keep the cost down because really most of my customers prefer the A7 size instead of the A2,
mm-hmm.
like our typical card-making world. So when I'm making that size card, it requires a lot of extra card stock that I, yeah.
You only get two cuts per 8.5 by 11 sheet.
Exactly.
The four, which would be the A4, A2 size
right.
if you were doing like a front panel. So that
yeah.
does affect it. So how much do you usually charge for invitations?
They range depending on the design and the layout. My cheapest, I think, that I've ever done were $2 a piece, and they were mm-hmm. very simple invitations. The more expensive ones that I've done are like a tri-fold with a pocket. They were $4 to $4.50.
Now you include everything, all the envelopes, all the return address envelope, you know, the RSVP envelopes, right?
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of times, customers, especially for weddings,
mm-hmm.
they like the postcard VPs. So that's convenient
oh.
for me because I can
yeah.
use a whole sheet of PTI cardstock and get four postcard size out of it.
That's a really smart idea. And you don't have to worry about envelopes. You don't have to include envelopes inside, which is an extra cost.
Yeah.
Especially
and
for you rides out there.
Thicker. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I see. I wish I would have known that when I was getting married 10 years ago. So what stamp sets do you use the most? What are the most requested?
Oh, flowers, definitely, especially for weddings or birthday parties.
All right, Dana, now my husband's a tax accountant, and I know I write off. No, he's not going to turn you in. Don't worry. Don't worry. I just know doing what I do, I write off a lot of my supplies. Now, if you were to give advice to somebody who's thinking of starting their own invitation business, would you recommend that they start keeping track of their costs? So if
Absolutely.
It does become a business expense and you're reporting the income, and I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't. Well, you should. You should.
Of course, of course.
You keep. How do you keep track of all that?
I keep really good records, mostly computerized, but yeah, I just started doing it actually last year, and I wish I had started earlier. I can tell anybody, start earlier. But yeah, I do keep really good records.
And I just want to mention that, and I don't want to take words out of my husband's mouth by any stretch, but if this is something you're considering doing, you know, think about what part of a room, you know, we actually, like for me personally, we write off my office and my house. And we write off part of our internet because I use it for work. And we write off part of our phone bill because I'm talking to you on the phone right now.
Right, and, exactly.
You know, all those types of things. Go and talk. If you're thinking of doing this seriously and want to start a business, these are things you need to factor in and maybe talk to somebody about. That's my two cents. That's my advice. Dana's
well, where were you? Well, where were you years ago, Erin?
Years ago. Well, you can talk to my husband. He's got it all figured out. But everyone listening, if you are thinking about this, you know, just keep that in mind because that, you know, it helps reduce your taxable income. I don't, you know what? I really feel like I'm giving advice where I have no business giving advice. My husband should be on here talking about this, but anyway, just keep that in mind.
It's true. It's true.
All right, Dana, thanks for talking to us tonight.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Erin.
Oh, it was so nice to talk to you.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to head into our question and answer segment. You call in with your questions. I forward them to the appropriate people, and we get some answers. And today, mostly the focus is going to be on Rachel's question, which is, how do we get it all done, all the crafting during our family time? So I have asked multiple people and have joined in myself, and there's lots of tips and tricks and strategies to get a little more crafting time in. So let's take it to the phones and find out what we learned today.
Yes, hi, Erin and everyone at Paper Tray. My name's Rachel, and I live in Marysville, Washington, and I have a question which has been on my mind for a long time. Every time I look at all your designers' blogs, and I'm continually blown away by how beautiful and wonderful all your projects are. And the question that always comes to my mind is, where in the world do they find the time to do this kind of stuff? Especially for those of you who have kids. I have two girls, 7 and 4, and I really struggle to find time for my crafting, and I'm not nearly as prolific as all of you are. So I guess my question is simply, I would love to know somebody's, you know, kind of a day in the life, how you manage, how you fit it all in. Especially since I know many of you are on more than one design team and have many obligations to magazines and various things. And I'm always just kind of blown away. And I would love to hear some, you know, some tips to be able to fit more crafting in on a regular basis. So I appreciate in advance the answer to my question. And thanks again, Erin, for putting this all together. Have a great day. Bye.
Hi, this is Jessica Witte. I'm calling to answer a question from Rachel. Rachel, I loved your question. I have 3 children, and a day in my typical life and crafting life starts very early. I usually get up at 4:45 in the morning, and that's one of the ways that I'm able to get things done, basically. I get up that early so that I can go work out and get some other things around the house done first before I start homeschooling with my 2nd grader. And we homeschool until about noon. And while we're doing that, we also have breakfast with the little kids and I do some preschool things with them and whatnot. So I'm generally in the first part of the day just pretty focused on the kids and on the house and those kinds of things that need to get done. And any crafting that I do comes during nap time in the afternoon. My kids are on a pretty set schedule, and I have still two very good nappers. So when nap time rolls around, I get pretty focused, and I come into my studio, which is otherwise known as the dining room, and I sit down and I work on whatever projects are due soon. Usually I'm working pretty close to the due date, so usually whatever project is due next is what I'm working on. And I try to bang it out in the afternoons because evening time gets a little crazy. I'm, you know, we're a typical family with soccer and church and everything else happening. So if it doesn't get done in the evening, then it generally has to get done, if it doesn't get done in the afternoon time, then it generally has to wait until either very late at night or until the weekend. And I'm not really so good at late at night anymore since I'm getting up so early. So I try to make sure that I do the best I can to get things done in the afternoon. But it does take some coordination and just some very intentional thinking, basically. If I get stuck looking at Facebook or Pinterest for too long, then I'm really not going to be able to fit in as much craft time as I need. So I have to be pretty mindful of where the time is going. I do still try to keep it fun. Some days it can be a little more of something that has to get done right away, and when it gets to that point, it's not as much fun. So even though I'm trying to work most days of the week, I still try to keep it lighthearted and fun so that the things that come out have a fun feeling to them and feel good to me. So thanks for a great question. I appreciate it.
Hi, Rachel. This is Betsy Veldman, and in answer to your question as to how we are more productive with our crafting time, it can definitely be really hard to squeeze in time for crafting. I have three kids, and ages 4 and 8 and 11, and I'll just kind of give you a little rundown of how my days typically work. Mornings are spent getting the kids up and ready and off to school, and of course cleaning up breakfast, and it's also when I start any laundry or do any household chores that need to be done. Most of the time, I don't make it into my craft room until after lunch. My youngest goes to preschool in the afternoons this year, which is a big change for me, but it's kind of nice to have a few hours to myself in the afternoon. That is when I try to get the bulk of my work done. And even though I don't get into my craft room until the afternoon, most of the morning, my mind has been there. Most of my craft projects are planned in between snooze buttons in the morning while I'm laying in bed, or in the shower, or vacuuming, those kind of things, so that when I am ready to go into my craft room, I have a plan in mind, and I'm ready to start on whatever project I need to do for the day. And so, yeah, most of it gets done in the afternoon, and my kids are home a little bit before 4, so that's the time when I need to drop everything, and then they hit the house, and it's like a whirlwind, and it's time to do homework and dinner and that sort of thing. But then I do usually try to squeeze in a little more time later at night when they're in bed, too. But some things you could try to be more productive is, I find I do much better with a deadline. If I don't have a deadline, I tend to procrastinate or just end up pushing paper around and not actually getting anything accomplished. So maybe just try setting some deadlines for yourself. You don't want to put yourself under too much pressure, because then the joy of creating goes out of it. But it might give you just a little push to be more productive. And the other thing I try really hard to do, but I don't always accomplish it, unfortunately, is I always try to leave my workspace clean when I'm finished crafting for the day. That way, the next day, if I have a few minutes to pop into my room and work on something, I don't have to spend my time cleaning up. And I just look forward to going into my craft room and just working on something instead of cleaning. So those are just a few ideas. But I don't think we always need to be so concerned that we're being productive all the time either, as long as we're just enjoying the creative process and having fun with this hobby that we enjoy. Don't have to put so much pressure on ourselves all the time. But I hopefully there's a few ideas to kind of get you going and work towards being more productive. Thanks for calling in, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. It's Miley. Thanks for calling in with a great question. In fact, it's so good, I would personally love to know the answer to this question myself. Well, I may not have the answer that you are looking for, but what I can do is I can share with you how I find some time in my life to get any crafting or design work that I need to get done. I am a stay-at-home mom to my 4.5-year-old son, and as most of you know, as a stay-at-home mom, I cannot afford the luxury of many quality, quiet time crafting hours. I am guilty of popping in a movie or letting my son watch a few extra cartoons just so I can sneak in some time. Back when my son was younger, I was able to work around his nap time, back when he used to take naps. But now that he's older, he does attend preschool, and I do take the time that he's away at school to get some crafting done as well. I'm also a night owl. I'll stay up late to get whatever work I need to get done. Also, my main tip, one of my favorite tips, is a way to maximize my crafting time. Something I carry around with me is a crafting journal. Just a simple notebook that's empty, and I carry it around with me wherever I go, and throughout the day, whenever ideas pop into my head or I come across the color combo or something that I find inspiring, I can quickly jot it down into the notebook. Then, when I do happen to find some crafting time, I can turn to that notebook, and it's got a number of ideas that I can refer to, ideas that are ready for me to work with, so that when I am crafting, I can use a notebook to help me get as much done as I can in a short amount of time, thoroughly ready, full of ideas for me to use. Anyways, I hope I answered your question, and thanks again for calling in with a great question. That's it for me. Bye-bye.
I thought I'd chime in on this as well, since I have two little kids. I have a 3.5-year-old, and Eliza's going to be 16 months here in a couple weeks. So I definitely know the pressures and the juggling act of being a mom and getting some time for yourself. So let me just go through my typical day. We usually get up between 7 and 8 because I am a night owl, and so we get up a little later. I mean, well, 7 o'clock really that late? Like 5, Jess, 4:45? That's crazy early. 7 o'clock, I don't know, it's a little sketchy. So we get up. If it's a preschool morning, we kind of have to hustle out the door. We make breakfast, get the kids out. I drive up to preschool, which is about a 20-minute drive, and I use the 3 hours that Hank is in preschool to either do something really special with my daughter, like we go to the park or we go to Monkey Joe's, or we run errands. That's when I do all my grocery shopping or, you know, running to Target or anything I need to do. And that's actually been working out really well for me the last couple weeks because that preschool's just started for us. And then we're home around noon. We do lunch. Now, Hank is, he's coming out of the nap time schedule. He doesn't nap as much anymore. I can usually get Eliza down, and depending on what I've done with the kids in the morning, I'll either, because I have a rule that I have to do one special thing with the kids. Like me and them, we do one special thing a day. And so if it's preschool morning, I try to, you know, we read books or we do games while Eliza's napping. Or lately I've been including Hank in my crafting. So he'll come in, I'll get some stamps and some ink pads for him, some colored pencils and some paper, and he'll sit at my desk and he'll craft while I craft. And I think it's, you know, I'm trying to think of it being special time for him to be a part of what mommy's doing, because he certainly goes down in the shop with dad and does manly things down there. And even though Matt might be actually accomplishing something, Hank's going to have some fond memories of working with daddy. And I try to think of that way with Hank working with Mommy, too. And he's being artsy and crafty and getting used Mommy's supplies. And, I mean, I think that is going to create some memories for Hank. I have been known, Hank gets an hour of screen time a day. That's my rule. That's our rule at our house. We don't do a lot of TV. He loves my iPad. So if I'm in a big time crunch or a big deadline, Hank might get lucky and get to sit in my office and play with my iPad for an hour while I work, while Eliza is napping. Then we're up and try to do something with the kids. We go to the park. We play outside. We have a play date. I cook dinner. And, you know, Matt's usually home at that time. We eat dinner as a family. That's another one of my – see, I have rules. I have rules to keep things in check and balance. I make dinner every night. We sit down. We have dinner every night. And while I am cleaning up, Matt starts the bath time routine. And then I usually have 20 minutes between when dinner is cleaned up and Matt's doing bed and bath where I can get chores done. And I force myself to do something extra because, you know, it's already been 2 hours of dinner prep, dinner, cleaning dinner up. And then I slug it through. I try to get the vacuuming done. I try to clean the bathrooms. I try to, you know, pick up that 20 minutes. I've learned to be really, really quick, really, really fast. It's not to say my house is immaculate. It is far from immaculate. I put out what fires I need to put out during that 20 to 30 minute period. And then that's like 8 o'clock, and now it's time to craft. I get a little work done. I usually have something to do for Paper Tray every night, so I do that. I put in my iPad onto my little speaker on my desk, and we get to work. Another helpful tip that I want to mention for those of you who have kids, and I really think kids of any age you can apply this to, and of course I'm talking to little kids. My goal in life is to wear them out. Sometimes it might be a two-day affair where I'm wearing them out, and if I know I have something I want to do, because the kids are going to need some downtime. So you optimize when they need downtime and when you need a little time to yourself. So, for example, I'll take Hank swimming on a Sunday afternoon. He'll get up the next Monday morning. We'll go to a library program. That Monday afternoon, both Hank and Eliza are going to be exhausted. They're going to take long naps. And if I know I need something done Monday, I'll set it up the day before where I just wear them down, wear them out. And, you know, it's not a bad thing. You're spending time with the kids. They're having fun. You also need I believe kids need downtime to just play on their own, and that sets that up. But this this has a couple little pitfalls built into it because sometimes when you wear them out, wear yourself out, have that happen. And also, I call it the 10-minute power nap. Heaven forbid the kids get 10 minutes of nap time in the car driving from whatever fun activity it is to home where I'm counting on them napping. If they get 10 minutes, they're awake the whole afternoon. I do not know how they do it. So, you know, if I know I have something to do, I'll make sure I give them snacks as soon as I put them in the car. So that I'll keep them up until they get home, and then they're going to crash, and then I have time to craft. And I would feel guilty about this, but I think every single mom out there has this sort of strategy built in. Wear out those kids so you can have some time to yourself. Just don't wear yourself out as well. Also, the majority of the year, Matt has Fridays off. So it's Friday right now. I have 3 hours to do the podcast. I'm getting it done. I will admit to feeling a bit stressed 1 or 2 days a month. That is pretty average. I'm kind of heading into that right now. We have a weekend. I have a podcast due. I have a bunch of release projects due. Matt and I have a date scheduled with friends that has been long scheduled, so I can't put it off. And finally, on the East Coast, it is not raining, and I have a fence and a deck to stain on Sunday. Yeah, it's going to be fun. Oh, and a baby shower present I have to get done for Monday. So I am feeling a little bit stressed. It's all going to work out. Everything's going to get done. The kids are going to be fine. And we have a family dinner tonight that we're hosting. It's a little bit stressful. So don't think we don't get stressed. We get very stressed. But it's only 1 or 2 days a month, and it's worth it. And I focus on this is what I want to do, and so therefore I make it happen. I still get the working out done. I still get the time with the kids. I still get the time with the husband. But I will admit to going to bed around midnight every night and feeling like I have had a very, very, very full day, gun to gun. And I know when these days with the kids are over, the little kids, I'm going to miss them. And I'm kind of tearing up just thinking about it now. So, you know, you try to do it all. And you go to bed, and you're happy because you had a full day. And you got stuff done. And that is what it's about. So thanks for your question, Rachel.
Hi, Erin. This is Sherry from New Jersey. I was wondering if any of the Paper Tray, Inc. team members scrapbooked, and if they did, in what ways do they incorporate their stamps on their pages? Since I'm gathering a bunch of stamps in my collection, wanted to see if there was another application in the scrapbooking world that they could share with me, and actually with all of us, and if there were any Paper Tray stamps that they like to use frequently on their pages, like their go-to stamps, that would be very helpful. Thanks so much. Bye.
Hey, Sherry. This is Erin. Now, everybody, Sherry and I met down at a splash pad in Maryland. She was visiting her sister, and she came up to me, and I was wearing my bathing suit. I was soaking wet. Hair was in my face, sunscreen everywhere. And she's like, hey, are you? I'm like, oh, no, not now. I was so embarrassed because I was not looking my best. And you know us women, we always want to look our best. But, Sherry, I was a little bit embarrassed, but it was really nice meeting you. So I took this question about scrapbooking to the designer forum, and I asked everybody kind of to give their summary, and I'm just going to read back what everyone has said, because believe it or not, I don't scrapbook anymore. I don't have time. So I can't be useful to you in this one, but Debbie Olson said that she likes the large word sets, like top 10 and top 10 editions, and I can see why they would be useful, and she also likes large format flowers. You could think of all the year flowers, really any floral set. I would imagine turning a new leaf as well. And she said that the Giga guidelines make great backgrounds even when you're stamping a full-size 12 by 12. You could probably do that pretty quick with that stamp set. Michelle actually scrapbooks a lot, if you've noticed, and she loves Heather's Road Trip, and I can see that would be very useful. And any of the scrapbook series stamps, there's quotations, there's tabs, and there's like a lined one. She also likes Get to the Point for its arrows, and she has been requesting forever on the board that we get some dies for that. So hopefully that request will fall on eager ears, open ears, and we'll get dies for those arrows from Get to the Point. And Danielle is a crazy scrapbooker. I would just click onto her blog, and she has nothing but she probably scrapbooks just as much as she does card making, so that's a really good resource for you. Also, on the Paper Tray, Inc. forums, there is a scrapbooking board, and I know Lee Penner just put some scrapbook pages up and some challenges, so that might be a place for you to go to find other people who are into scrapbooking and use Paper Tray products. On my advice, really, you can't go wrong. Short of the stamp sets that are sentiment stamp sets specifically for card making, I can't think of any stamps that would not work great on scrapbook pages. Just off the top of my head, some of I would think would be great applications. Simple Circles, which is a $5 set, great backgrounds. Star prints, stars are great accents for scrapbook pages. I'd use them all the time. Any of the fillable frames, you could put journaling inside those. Any of the florals, and I think any of the 1 3/4 inch stamps, which is there's a huge line of those. Those would make great accents as well. But, you know, anything with the dies now, it is so easy to punch out and make a little accent for your scrapbook pages. I really think Paper Tray and scrapbooking go hand in hand. It would be very easy to segue into that and get most bang for your buck out of your stamps and dies because they can work for both applications. Okay, Sherry, I hope this answered your question. All right, I have blabbed tremendously. I'm sorry. I apologize. I hope nobody minded. Sometimes I get a little caught up, so we're going to wrap this up really quick. This is a very long episode as it is. We need to pick a winner today. Our participants are Holly, Terry, Joy, Sue, Veronica, Rachel, and Sherry. Plug them in. The number that spits out is number 3 today, and that is Joyce. So, Joyce, please contact customer service, and we'll get a stamp set of your choice on out to you. And the link should be right on the homepage. It's the email contact. Okay, everybody else, the next podcast is November 5th. Please call in with your discussion questions and your questions for our design team, Nicole and Jen, 301-799-8338. Again, thank you so much, everyone who has participated and helped me out in the last week. If I didn't use your questions for the Q&A segment this month, you never know. They might turn up in the future. So thanks again. Hope to hear from you, and we'll see you on November 5th. Hard to believe. After Halloween. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.